Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
With four times the amount of electricity wires compared to other European countries, due mostly to overhead cables in rural areas, Ireland is particularly vulnerable to weather bomb events like Storm Éowyn. So how can we make our electricity infrastructure more resilient to avoid similar outcomes in the future? And what impact could the cost of upgrading the network have on electricity prices? Well, I'm joined now by Dr. Barry Hayes, who's a specialist in electrical power systems at UCC, and Dr. Paul Dean, senior lecturer in clean energy at University College Cork, and you're both very welcome. Now, Barry, I want to begin with you. 800,000 people we know lost power because of Éowyn. Thousands are still waiting to be reconnected as of this morning. Can you tell us why that figure was so high initially, and then why people still have no power today so far down the road?
Well, as you say, Claire, in Ireland, we have a very dispersed population. So around 70% of the population live in or around our main cities and towns, but the other 30% are about as far away from each other as they could possibly be. And that's due to various historical reasons. As you said in the beginning, that we have four times as much distribution infrastructure per capita as the UK and other countries in Europe. And a lot of that infrastructure is made up of overhead lines. And these are naturally vulnerable to storms coming in from the Atlantic. We had an unprecedented storm in Storm Éowyn with record wind speeds, and that has resulted in the 800,000 disconnected at the moment, and it makes the restoration job extremely difficult to reconnect everyone. But we're still on that.
We had the CEO of ESB in here with us yesterday, Paddy Hayes, and I was asking him about moving the overhead power lines underground. You've looked into that. Have you put a figure on how much it would cost?
I haven't put a figure on it, Claire. There was a figure of 100 billion quoted in an Irish Times article last week. That's not my figure, but it would certainly be a very large number. We have around 150,000 kilometres of overhead lines in Ireland. And if you were, for example, to look for a cable connection from ESB Networks now, the cost per kilometre for a new cable connection could be €250,000 per kilometre. And a lot of that cost is due to the civil works. You would have to dig up roads. You would have to reroute the current lines that are going on ESB poles across fields. So it's difficult to put a number on it. There may be economies of scale from having a large-scale undergrounding project, and maybe ESB Networks will be better placed to put a number on it, but the number would certainly be very large and, I think, prohibitive in Ireland, where we already have some of the highest electricity prices in Europe.
Other countries do it, though, don't they, in Denmark and in the Netherlands?
Yeah, that's right. In countries like Denmark and Finland, there is a large-scale undergrounding programme currently ongoing, and the reason for that is to improve resilience and improve climate resilience specifically. They, however, don't have the same sort of dispersion of population that we have. People tend to live closer to villages and towns. It's also very difficult to compare us with, for example, the Netherlands, as you mentioned. You know, they have a population of 18 million people in a country that's less than the size of Munster. It's a very, very urbanised country, and a lot of that infrastructure is underground. It's very, very difficult to do that, just because of the way our network is designed. For example, Claire, in Ireland we have the largest number of single customer per transformer in Europe, and what I mean by that is that we have one distribution transformer, one specific part of the distribution network solely for one customer. And I think that's a legacy of partly of one-off housing and other reasons around settlement patterns in Ireland over the years.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why Paddy Hayes explained to us yesterday it's taking so long to connect people now as we come to the second week after the storm. Paul, the ESB does have a plan, doesn't it? A plan to upgrade ageing parts of the network. So what are they doing and what are they going to spend on it?
Yeah, that's correct. And this would have preceded the terrible storm that we had 2 weeks ago. And it's not just to address the resilience of the network, because we know that the weather is getting more extreme, but also our network is very old. A significant portion of the electricity distribution system that we have in Ireland was built between 1950 and 1980. We have about 250,000 electricity poles out there at the moment that are about 60 years old. Now, if you take anything made of timber and you put it anywhere in Ireland, 60 years old, its ability to survive extreme weather is going to be really compromised. So preceding this storm, there was a plan put in, a plan as well, proposed by the ESB to the regulator to spend more money, to invest more money in upgrading the network. Now, that's a good idea, because age is really important here. Younger, newer power lines with new equipment, new infrastructure has a much higher ability to withstand extreme weather. But it's going to cost money. Now, the ESB can't just spend money at their discretion. They have to propose a plan to the regulator. And what they have proposed is a capital spend of somewhere between 10 billion and 13 billion. Now, not all of that, Claire, is for new electricity poles. A lot of it is for substations and other equipment and lots of other pieces as well. Now, 10 to 13 billion sounds like an incredible amount of money, but if we break it down into brass tacks, what does that mean for our electricity bills? Right now, at the moment, a typical household in Ireland, we're paying about 250 euros embedded in our electricity bill for the movement of electricity to our homes in the infrastructure that we have. That 10 billion would see that increase to about 340 to 350 euros a year. So about 100 euro increase, which is roughly about 2 euros extra per week on our electricity bills. Now, interestingly, what the ESB did, they went out and surveyed people. Again, this was in last year, well in advance of the of Storm Éowyn, and they kind of did a pulse survey and asked people, but would you be willing to pay more on your electricity bill if we were able to supply a more resilient network? Now, 30% of the people just said no way off the bat. As Barry said, we already have very high electricity bills here in Ireland, and it's completely understandable. But about 70% of the people were willing to pay about 2 euros to 4 euros more per week on their electricity bill. So I think there's an appreciation out there that we need to spend. But again, I would just reinforce the point, Claire, that it's not just about the length of the network. The age of the network that we have here in Ireland is coming home to roost. We are going to have to upgrade it in any event, no matter what.
Yeah, but I mean, as Barry said earlier, like, we do have the highest electricity prices in Europe anyway. And given what you've just said and what's ahead of us, those prices are only going one way, and it certainly doesn't seem like they're coming down.
No, and I think it's important to be honest here with the public. You know, if we were speaking 5 years ago, our electricity bills would have been roughly around 1,000 euros per household. Now they're around 1,400 euros per household. Now, this could play out in two ways. Our electricity bills are made up of the cost of making electricity, which unfortunately is dominated by the price of international natural gas. And then there's the cost of moving electricity, which is through the network. Now, about 30% of our bill is for moving electricity. That would certainly creep up by about 2 to 3 euros a week, I think. And again, that reflects the necessary upgrades that need to be made just because of the age of the network. The cost of making electricity is that could go up or down depending on international gas markets. I suppose the best kind of scenario that I would hope for, that hopefully international gas prices will soften over the next number of years, and that would mean the cost of making electricity will come down a little bit, and that will allow us to absorb the cost of moving electricity and reinforce our network that would absorb some of that. But it's difficult to see prices coming down at the moment. I think certainly we are going to have to invest in the network to be more resilient to extreme events like this.
And can you understand, because a lot of people were surprised yesterday when the CEO of ESB said that the cost of the repairs in the aftermath of Éowyn would ultimately be passed to the consumers?
Look, unfortunately, you know, people pay for most things. Often things take a very circuitous route, but the cost of things will ultimately wind its way back to us and into our pockets. It'll be interesting to see what the final costs are, and it's difficult to make an estimation on that at the moment. Again, the ESB can't spend money at their discretion. They may want to spend money, but they might not be allowed in certain areas. Some of the faults that they will be upgrading and replacing at the moment might be already included in the plan for capital build out over the next number of years. So there might be a slight overlap there, but I think unfortunately the network does have to be upgraded, and those costs are generally socialised around all users of electricity, not just the people in one area.
Okay, well, Barry, let's come back then to resilience. And if moving the underground, the cables underground, if that's just too expensive, what mitigation options do we have? What are the alternatives?
Well, as Paul has alluded to, it appears that these big storms coming in from the Atlantic are going to become more frequent and more intense as we look towards the future. Some parts of the world with climate change are experiencing a lot of drought, wildfires, extreme heat. It appears that more frequent and intense storms is going to be the impact, or certainly one of the impacts here in Ireland. So it appears that this will happen again. And it's very difficult from the point of view of planning, because if you're to plan the infrastructure long term, you might say that Storm Éowyn was a once in 50 years event or a once in 100 years event based on historical weather records. But there's an uncertainty now. Will this become a once in 10 years event, a once in 5 years event, even more frequent? As Paul said, even if we can't underground all of the infrastructure, there are things that we can do to reinforce some of our overhead infrastructure. There are things around vegetation management. Some of the problems that we had were due to trees falling on electricity lines. But all of that will take time. And in the short term, I think we also need to invest more in local backup solutions. I mean, for example, I have family that live in quite remote parts of rural Ireland. A lot of those have invested in generators or are thinking about it. I think we need to better resource community hubs in order to respond to these events. And I suppose maybe on another point, I think there's naturally a lot of anger following an event like this. You know, people are without power for almost 2 weeks now, and it's understandable that people are very angry. I know the ESB are taking a lot of criticism, but I think you know, we need to be careful about finger pointing. I think a lot of these issues are, you know, related to our geography on the edge of the Atlantic and our exposure to these storms. And I think it's very important that people respect and support, particularly the repair crews who are doing a very dangerous job under difficult mm-hmm. conditions that are still out there trying to restore customers.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people have made that point, that these people who are out there fixing the problems, many of them are affected by the problems too, and they're parts of those communities. But just going back to your point on the backup generators, are you saying that we may have to look at individuals purchasing generators for their own use, but also some sort of a state-backed scheme to make sure that there are sufficient generators in these communities to make sure that they can get through these periods, which are likely to happen more often?
I think so. I think it's already happening as regards individuals buying generators for their homes. A state-backed scheme may be beneficial. It may be the best way to do it is to organise it around the community. So, you know, the community, a local community hub, be it the parish hall or the local GA club, has resources available. I think what we'll also see as we look towards the future, more and more people will have home batteries installed. I was reading during last week, a lot of electric vehicle owners were able to use their electric vehicle batteries to run some critical loads during the outage. And also, you know, there may be innovative solutions. For example, you know, we may be able to use mobile generators, mobile backup energy storage that can help with the recovery during these big events, because I think we have to be realistic and accept the fact that this will happen again.
Paul, your views on people buying these backup generators? I mean, these will be diesel-powered generators. That, it would seem, on the face of it, flies in the face of our climate change agenda.
Yeah, look, I suppose, if you're in a house that's cold, telling people about the planet getting warm isn't going to probably do you any favours. I think we must look after each other and realise that, you know, there's a lot of vulnerable people out there, there's young families who are really struggling and suffering at the moment. I suppose just while Barry was speaking there, I was reminded of my grandparents' house back in the 1980s and 1990s. The electricity supply that we had in Ireland wasn't anywhere near as reliable as it is today. And a lot of homes, particularly in rural Ireland, had super surge. heaters. You know, they were small mobile gas heaters that were there for those conditions. So I think, again, encouraging people where they can to have backups, either in terms of heating or in terms of other alternatives. But we must remember that I think that we will have to absorb some of that fossil generation at certain times, because at the moment, you know, there's a lot of people suffering out there at the moment, and we don't want to put people in immediate risk. And obviously, of course, if you're using something like a SuperServe or a natural gas-fired heater, which is a lot more affordable than an open fire, it's a lot more mobile, it's a lot more agile, you can store it in the shed and bring it in when you need it. We do have to be very careful with carbon monoxide, and that that as well, for anyone with a backup generator, has to be well ventilated. So I think there's a lot of lessons we can learn from the past, from things that our parents and grandparents did, that we can carry forward, that will increase that resilience for those hopefully rare occasions when power does go down.
All right, thank you both, Dr. Barry Hayes and Dr. Paul Dean. Thank you for joining us.
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.